Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, 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 everybody, and welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Monday, November 6th. I am your host, Scott Fullerton. Thanks so much for tuning into the show today. Welcome to us live. Again, Monday, November 6th. Hope you guys had a fantastic weekend. We had a good weekend here in Northeast Ohio, but we're back to chilly again this week. It's going to be in the mid to high 40s all week. Fall thunderstorm last night, which I always enjoy, but getting through to a new week of fun and excitement here for LGBT Talk Radio. We've got Left of Straight Show today and tomorrow. We have Standing on Our Soapbox Wednesday. All excited for that. Today I'm going to have two great brand new guests for you. Rick Sky will be on in just a couple of minutes. He is an amazing cabaret performer. He's also done shows all the way from Chicago to New York to London to Scotland. And we're going to be talking about his new show he's having at Don't Tell Mamas in New York City. He'll be on this. Then our second hour, 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock Pacific time, we're going to have Grant Turk on. He is the founder and executive director of Venice Pride in Venice, California. They got a couple of great things going on over there, and I'm going to talk to him in the second hour. Tomorrow, I am going to go see Olivia Newton-John live in concert, and looking very much forward to that. I'm going to have two brand new interviews with new people that are pre-taped that will go, and I'll do a live intro tomorrow before I get out to Cleveland. But I have on the amazing Lisa Lenke. Lisa is a comedian, stand-up, web star in such series of successful people and dog moms and teachers on the television show. God, I forget the station already. But she'll be on tomorrow along with Nick Hayward, who's an amazing singer. He was on Haircut 100. A great band in the 80s, one of the original English pop bands that came over. Been doing music ever since. He's only with Haircut for a little over a year, and he's been doing solo ever since. And he has a new solo album that just came out this past week. He'll be on tomorrow talking about that. Wednesday, we're bringing back our good buddy Michael Vega for his monthly appearance on Standing on My Soapbox. So much to talk about in LGBT news and pop culture and politics. Of course, we have another shooting going on and so much going on. So a great week of LGBT Talk Radio. Before we start, I want to give a big thank out to our sponsors and media co-sponsors. Tony Guadagnino, if you go to www.tonyguad.com. That's TonyGuad.com. Tony is our social media guru for Twitter. He does also Instagram and Facebook and so much social media great stuff for companies. He shouts out all my social media. Go check him out. Alexander Rodriguez, of course, from On the Rocks Radio, just had an amazing weekend at Palm Springs Pride as the main MC on the main stage Saturday and Sunday. So thanks to him and On the Rocks Radio for being a media sponsor. He brings lots of great guests and information to me. Of course, our buddies Q Life Media and True FM Media for simulcasting Left of Straight Radio out on their stations. And I'll be doing some more work with them in the future. If you're not following me, please do on Instagram and Twitter. It's at Left of Straight, and Left of Straight is always LEFTOFSTR and the number 8. So Instagram and Twitter at Left of Straight. Facebook, it's the Left of Straight Show, spelled the same. My personal Facebook is Scott Fuller, is looking for new friends on there. You can follow the Left of Straight Show on iTunes, on Spreaker, and we have our very own absolutely free app. If you go to your app store on iTunes or Play, the Play Store for Google, you can find us on Left of Straight Show, 4 separate words, and it's an absolutely free show to listen to. So really cool. Be sure to check us out there. And we are just getting simulcast now on Podknife as well. That's Podknife is doing our shows as well. So thanks for them for just coming aboard last week. So in just a couple of minutes, we're going to have on our first guest, Rick Sky, calling in from New York City. Let's jump a little bit into the news. Like I said, of course, this horrible church shooting in Texas, and they're coming so regular. I don't know what to say about it. I know nothing's going to get done in far as gun laws go, so it's just depressing. I don't even want to talk about that part of it because nothing's going to change. The Republicans and the NRA have a stranglehold on the country, and we're not going to get any gun laws out of this. We've had mass killings every time we turn around, and there's no change. When we first started talking about this in Sandy Hook, when you have fifth and sixth graders mowed down, 23 of those and teachers, if it's not going to change then, it's just not going to change. So, yeah, not real happy about it, but what can you do? So, of course, thinking about those people, I hate the thoughts and prayers thing, because everyone's sending thoughts and prayers and not doing anything about it. But, of course, they are in our thoughts, all the families of this very small, close-knit community. And it really does break your heart that half of the 26 people dead are children under the age of, I think, 13 or so. So that was horrible. Let's get some lighter news. And quickly, if you're a big superhero fan like you know I am, we had Thor come out this weekend. Very excited about that. Thor. I won't give away the ending because there's always a little hint in the final scenes, but I recommend sticking around to the end of it. So, yeah, great movie. I was very happy for it. It was the best in the series so far of the three standalone Thor movies. It grossed $121 million over the weekend. I think the first one was 68 and the second one was like 86 or 96. So 121, worth the wait. It had Loki in it and the Hulk, a lot of humor, and it was kind of fun. Kind of went awry a little bit in some certain places, but overall, it was a great standalone movie, so I'm excited about that. And speaking of movies, I do want to talk about, there was an interview over the weekend with Greg Berlanti, who I love, who does all my superhero shows on the WB. He's executive producer on Supergirl, on Arrow, on The Flash. He also does Riverdale on the CW. Such a prolific, out and proud producer, director. And he is producing a new movie that's going to be coming out in March of next year, but they were talking about it over the weekend. It's called Love, Simon, and it's going to be one of the very first mainstream comedies coming out featuring a gay character. And it's kind of in the John Hughes mold, if you remember all the Pretty in Pink and 16 Candles and those kind of movies. It's that, except the main character is a gay guy, Simon. And he is writing, pen-palling to a closeted person at school, and he ends all of his posts to him, Love, Simon, was where the total came from. But it's going to be a mainstream movie. It's going to come out with – it's not those limited releases, like even things were – Brokeback was limited release. And a lot of the gay films are always a limited release at first before it goes out to mainstream America. But this is going to be a full-out release in March of next year. So I'm really looking forward to that, to see what happens with that. So that's kind of cool. But, guys, we have so much else to talk about. My first guest is on the line waiting for us, so we're going to go get him in just a second. In honor of his show coming up, we're going to play a little bit of our buddy Seth Sykes, who was on last season. This is his song, Cabaret. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to the amazing Sky. Listen to Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
What good is it ain't
guys, we are back. That is cabaret artist Seth Sykes. And speaking of cabaret artists, man, I'm so lucky today, guys. My first guest is a multi-talented performer and illusionist who won the 2017 award for Best Impersonation Characterization Drag Artist by the Manhattan Association of Cabarets and Clubs. He two-handedly brought back the amazing puppet Madam after the wonderful Waylon Flowers passed away, and his impersonation of the icon Liza Minnelli has brought him to packed houses from New York to Chicago and London to Dublin. He is now hosting as Liza a fantastic show each month at Don't Tell Mamas in New York City. It's called Bazazz, a sequin variety show. I can't wait to talk to him. Please welcome for the first time to the show, Mr. Rick Sky. Rick, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Scott, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks for calling all the way over in beautiful downtown New York. How are you today?
I'm great. That was Seth Sykes, wasn't it, singing just before I came on?
That was Seth Sykes. We had him on last season, another amazing cabaret performer as well. Love both of you guys. So talented. Thanks to the show. Congratulations on the show. I know it kind of started last month, and you're going to keep going like every month here, right?
Yeah, the Don't Tell Mama came to me and asked me to do the show, actually. They asked me to put together a variety show. So we had the first one on October 27th, and then we have them in November on the 25th, and December on the 29th, and New Year's Eve, and it's the, you know, we have the full backing of the club, so it's kind of fun.
That's amazing. We're going to talk all about that a little later in the interview. Let's start, since it's
okay.
your first time on the show, give us a little background. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in New York City, and what kind of got you
yeah,
interested
I grew up in, New York.
In performing?
I grew up in New York, and ever since I was little, that was the thing I was most interested in. I was always, if you ask anybody, they'll say, oh, he was always off doing, making a tap dance or doing something or forcing us to watch a puppet show or something like that. I was always doing that. And I think it was just because, you know, the average life was just drab a little bit where I was. So I was always into that. And then I went to NYU and I studied acting with Stella Adler. And I studied ballet at the Joffrey Ballet. And then I kind of, when I was first starting out, you know, I got a lot of like, well, you're not really this and you're not really that. You're not really a comedian. You just kind of look Italian, but you're not really who I'd send out to be an Italian. So I decided to start writing my own shows and to show everybody what it was that I could do until agents could figure out what that was. So the first show I did was called The Flip Side of Neil Sedaka, and I did that for a couple of years in New York. And that was a big show as well. Actually, that's what this show that I'm doing now reminds me of, that when there were backup boys and things like that. So it reminds me of that. And we had great, I had great success with that. So I just kept writing and writing and writing. I wrote a show called The War of the Mama Roses, which was with using a lot of impersonators. And it was about inappropriate people auditioning for the role of Mama Rose and Gypsy. And it was really funny. We had, and we had Chuck Sweeney in it as Peggy Lee, and you know, Barbara Streisand, and me as Liza, all auditioning for that part. And from there, then I just wrote a show called The Slice of Minnelli, where I played Liza. Then everyone kept encouraging me to do more and more and more of it. So I did, and then I went to the Edinburgh Festival and ended up in London in an 800-seat theater. And it was very successful. So it's been a great thing.
That's amazing. Now, you don't go directly to Liza, did you? Were you doing any other characters before you hit Liza? And Liza, you become known and iconic for, but what did you start out doing?
I started out just being, you know, a singer and a comedian and an actor. And I've been in, you know, I was on All My Children for a while, acting. And I wrote many other shows. I wrote a big musical review called Macabre, and that was that had five people in it who, you know, all played five different roles, and so there were like 25 characters in the show, but they just kept changing their clothes all the time, and so like that. So people kept saying, you know, you should do that. I wrote one sort of funny Liza song in that show. It was called Mine Share instead of Mine Hair, and there were sort of parody lyrics to it, and it was a big hit. And people kept asking me to do that number in their, like, in a comedy show or this show. And I wanted to keep performing, so I kept doing it. But then they would say, well, you should write another song. You should do another one. You should get up and talk. And you should, you know, all of that. So finally, I just did it, and I did this big Liza show. And that's like 15 years ago. So
That's awesome. That is so cool. I mean, the Dublin Theater Festival, our good friend Steve Fales, he did his Confessions of a Mormon
yes.
Boy there just this last summer and everything.
Yes.
That's a fantastic festival. And you've been all over London, England. What's it like performing over there?
Well, people kept saying, you know, they'll really get you in London. You should go to London. And I was like, I can barely perform in New York. How am I going to go to London? And then, then like within a week, a woman called me up and said she was doing a thing in London where they would have an American performer and an English performer on the same bill. And would I be interested in coming over and being the American person? And I went. And the minute I got there, I thought, oh, everyone was right. You know, my show is kind of a little bit of music hall and like funny lyrics and twists on things. And they really go
right.
for like the language over there and, you know, what I was doing that way. So, and they love, in America, sometimes people would get not upset, but they would say, oh, you know, I love Liza Minnelli. Why are you poking fun at her? I said, well, I love her too, but like we all know, you know, we know what's funny about our icons. So, you know, I'm just pointing that up a little
sure.
bit. And in England, that's what they love the most. They say, oh, we know we love Shirley Bassey, but of course we know what's funny about her. You know, we love Liza Minnelli, but we like to take a little, you know, a little look at it and have a laugh. So it's actually went much better over there. People are catching up over here now. So that's a good thing.
That is a good thing, definitely. I hate it when the humor's better over there. We have the better teeth so far. That's it, damn it. So was Slice of Manelli, was that your first full Liza show? I'm sorry.
Yes, Slice of Manelli was, yes.
Talk about that show.
Well, that was the one that I that came out of that one number that I had written for another show. And it was actually September. I was supposed to open the show when September 11th happened, and then it got all canceled. And then within a couple of months, the club called and said, you know, we have to get back to like normal over here. We have to have some shows. People have to laugh.
Right.
So, like, would you please come and do the show? So I did, and it was a hard time to open, but it went over really well. And but it's so funny. The man who ran the club said, you know, these people who really do this well, it takes years and years and years and years, and I, you know, for them to really reach their peak at what they do. And I can, looking back now, I can see that, that when I first started, I thought I was doing it all correctly and everything, but now I actually sort of live it. And that's all I have to do in the show is, like, believe every moment that I'm in it, that I'm actually her. And that's
right.
what makes the jokes actually funnier, and that's what makes the songs deeper and all of that. But it's a simpler thing than what I was doing in the beginning. I was doing lots of bells and whistles in the beginning, and now it's actually very simple.
Gotcha. And she is such good-humored and such a fantastic person. I had to see your show.
No. You know, when she was working a lot, she was always very busy. I don't know that people necessarily want to go sit down and watch somebody imitate them. So she could have, because she used to drop into Dilltown Mamas all the time. But, you know, so I don't, I just think she's a very busy person right now. She's in California sort of relaxing and taking it easy. So I hope she'd be happy to see the show and that she's being portrayed this way.
She always seems like she has such a great sense of humor. I think she'd love something like that, though. That would
That's
be awesome.
That's my thing. You know, you can never tell what people are like in person, but she does seem, I mean, she is so funny. I mean, it's one of the things I love about her.
This is true. And then you did a Judy and Liza Together Again show. Talk about who you played off of with that and how that show went.
Well, there's a man named Tommy Femia in New York City, and he did Judy for like 25 years at Don't Tell Mamas every Saturday night. And we both got booked in Florida to do a show. And when we got down there, he sort of looked at me and said, what are you doing here? And I said, what are you doing here? And he said, I'm supposed to do a show. I said, I'm supposed to do a show. And it turned out that the theater had, like, all along knew that they wanted a Judy and Liza show. So we had 3 days to put it together. And we just, like, mashed up our shows a little bit and put it in intermission. And it was really a big hit. People loved it. So when we came back to New York City, Tommy said, you know, I have every single Saturday at Don't Tell Mamas, and if you'd like to join me, let's do three. You know, let's do three. And we did, and they were all sold out. And we just went month to month saying, do you want to do next month? And how about March? And how about April? And it went on for 7 years. And
That's
it just
incredible.
Closed last June. Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, I didn't have to advertise, nothing. People just came and came and came. It's crazy.
That is awesome. Then you did a collaboration, did Eliza and Barbara as well. How did that go?
Yes, with Stephen Brinberg. He had a manager in London who thought it would be great to put us together. And it was terrific because in London, like, it's so different than here. I mean, they put us in a big 400-seat theater in Leicester Square, and we ran for, you know, a week. And Joan Rivers had been in that theater the week before. And, you know, it was a big, big deal, and people loved it. And it's just things like that are viewed a little bit differently over there. Because, you know, all the big actors, they're at Christmas time, they do pantomimes, they put on dresses, and, you know, John Gielgud used to play the fairy godmother and Cinderella and stuff like that. And so they're a little bit looser with it. They think it's like, they get that it's two men in dresses and they're having a little fun. And it's just, you get big regular mass audiences come to see stuff like that.
Yeah, I've never had the pleasure of going over there, but I'm a huge fan of John Barrowman, and he talks about it, all the stuff that he's done over there, being from Scotland and everything and living over in Wales. So, yeah, it's a whole different mindset over there. It's something I'd love to see sometime because
you
it's
should
just
go.
Incredible.
No, it's really, really enlightening.
That would be
fantastic.
Amazing. When's the last time you were back there?
Excuse me?
When's the last time you were in London or UK?
Maybe it's a long time now. Maybe 2013, 2014, I think.
Wow.
I played
I would love to go there.
The Café de Paris.
Ooh, nice. That sounds cool.
And it
cool.
was really fantastic. It was so funny. I remember when I did the show, I was part of a variety show, and the man said, you know, you'll enter from backstage, and then you'll come on. And I said, oh, no. You know, when I was a little boy, you would have these albums like Marlene Dietrich at the Café de Paris or, you know, Noel Coward. And they always said on the back of the album, she descended the golden staircase at the back of the room and wended her way through the tables, greeting friends before she reached the stage and sang. But so I said, I want to enter from the back of the golden staircase. I want to come down this golden staircase and go through the tables. And that's what I want to live my – a lot of what I do in show business is sort of living my – dream of the ideas of things that I had when I was a kid. You know, I want to do those same things that I saw people do. So I got to do that, and it was really, really, really great. It's a beautiful place. It looks sort of like the Titanic, actually. It was built in 1912, so it has that
wow.
same look to it.
That is so cool. Well, let's take a short little break here. I want to play a little bit here. This is you doing Liza with one of my favorite songs, Maybe This Time. And a little bit on the end, we have a little of in you as the persona of Liza. We're going to go ahead and take a break. Listen to Rick Sky here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the resurrection of Madam. For those of you that aren't an old fart like me, Madam was such a huge star. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. You're listening to Left to Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Maybe this time I'll be lucky. Maybe this time he'll stay. Maybe this time, for the first time, love won't hurry away. I'll be home at last, not a loser anymore, like the last time and the time before. Everybody loves a winner, so nobody loves me. Let it be full, let it happy. That's what I long to be. When all the odds are there in my favor, something's bound to begin. Nobody loves me. Let it be full, let it happy. That's what I long to be. When all the odds are there in my favor, something's bound to begin.
So listen, you guys, now that we're starting to stop, there are a couple of people that I feel that I have to thank. The first is someone I've known my entire life, right? I've known her since I was 11 years old. She's my very best friend in the entire world. I think she's a genius. She used to do all the lighting and the sound for my father's movies, right? Ladies and gentlemen, please help me thank Miss Collette. What's Collette laugh? Laugh, ladies and gentlemen. Miss Collette laugh.
All righty, we are back. That is our first guest today, the amazing Rick Sky as Liza. I love that whole bit there. You are so good, my friend. Wow.
Thank you.
So impressive. How long did it take for you to get that? I mean, you said it's taken a lot of years to perfect it, but when you were first kind of gearing up to be Liza, how long did it really take for yourself to feel comfortable doing it?
Well, actually, this is an interesting thing. When I first did the show, people kept saying, gee, normally when you perform, you're not shy at all. You just sort of come out and, you know, beat everybody over the head. And now you're playing Liza Minnelli, who is sort of famous for doing that. And you're kind of at the mercy of the audience. You seem a little shy when you first come out. And then if the audience reacts, then you kind of give a little more. But well, what's that about? And I realized, you know, everybody thinks, oh, you're gay, you're going to be comfortable wearing a dress or wearing a bra, shaving your legs or whatever. And I realized that I had, like, an issue about that I had to get over feeling funny about that. And so someone came to me and said, well, if you were a cowboy, you'd wear chaps and you'd carry a gun, which you'd never do in real life. So what's the problem with wearing high heels and, like, a wig and ear? Like, what's the problem? And when I thought of it that way, then immediately I got over it and it was better for me. But I wouldn't have thought that that would have been the problem, but it was. And once that was solved, then it got better.
That's a great story because so many, like you said, so many people think any female illusionist or impersonator or even drag queens are naturally feminine, but I know a lot of them that really aren't, that watch more sports than I've watched every time in my life. So it's such a good story. I just don't think.
Or even just
that.
Like, oh, you're gay, you'll be comfortable with that. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I would have thought so too, but not evidently.
I want to talk a little bit about Madam because you took us over. Everyone knows today Terry Fader from America's Got Talent and the new little girl just won last season's America's Got Talent with a puppet. But Madam was the shit back in the day because I'm an older guy, right? And the first puppet that I know of with two Emmys to their name. So talk a little bit about Waylon Flowers. How did you come across the character? What made you want to do something like reviving this iconic character?
Well, it actually wasn't up to me. It was I shared an accompanist at the time with Madam. She had an accompanist who's playing her show, and he kept coming to my rehearsal saying, and I would say off color things to him and like little Mae West jokes, and he would say, you know, you're the one who should be doing Madam. And I said, well, I don't do a puppet. I don't know what you're talking about. Why would I do that? And then one day he called and said, oh, we're having terrible trouble with the show. It's not funny. So the lady who owns the puppet would like someone to write a new show. So I volunteered to do it, and I wrote a new show. And then the guy who was doing the puppet quit. And the lady said, well, you're funny. I think you're funny. It's harder to be funny than to do the puppet. I think I could teach you how to do the puppet. So I thought, gee, even if I stink and she fires me after 6 months, I'll get to do Madam. Like, that'll be a fantastic thing. So she had booked the puppet in Atlantic City for 8 weeks. So she really needed like somebody and a show right away. So I quit my job. I was working at a hotel, and I quit so that I could like practice 8 hours a day, like you do for Broadway, like learn the puppet and like make a new show and all that. And then I opened like cold in Atlantic City. And it went really, really well for a long time. It was very scary because Waylon had a lot of fans, so they would come to see the show, but very skeptically. You know, oh, I love this is something I loved, and you might screw it up for me. And we loved Waylon, and you know, I no matter what I did, I couldn't be him. I had to be, you know what I mean? I'm not going to be some guy
right,
who ran around with in their 20s, you know, and, oh, we used to get drunk with Waylon. Like, I can't do that. All I could do is a puppet, so I hope you're happy with that. And, you know, I even went to P-Town where he started, and people would, the first day I walked down the street, people were sort of yelling at me from their porches, you know, you better be good. We love Waylon,
oh, no.
You know. Yeah, and then I remember the opening night, it was like a little frosty opening, and then by the end of the show, they gave me a really great ovation, and Jimmy James was there, and he said, I knew Waylon, and he would approve, and I had to keep getting this, like, approval from everybody everywhere I went. I knew Waylon,
oh, wow.
And he would think you were good. So that was kind of funny. It was always a little scary, but when the puppet came to life by itself, I knew like it was going to be a good show. And Waylon's brother came to see me, and he said he thought it was like one of the best shows he had seen since his brother passed away. So that was great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, for those of you guys that don't know out there, Waylon Flowers, he was one of the first openly gay comics, and he actually contracted HIV/AIDS and died at only 48 years old back in 88 when the whole crisis was going full steam and the president wouldn't say its name and all the other bullshit stuff.
And
I
did my first show on the 20th anniversary of the day he died. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my goodness. No pressure there. Oh, my goodness.
The guy who did the lighting had done Waylon's lighting. It was like a weird – and he came up to me and he said, I used to do the lighting for Waylon. And you know who else used to do the lighting for Waylon in P-Town? Jerry from Grey Garden. You know Jerry?
Of course, sure.
Yeah, Jerry. So he's got pictures of himself like holding Madam in P-Town. He always sends them to me and wishes me luck. And I'm thrilled that I know Jerry. So.
Oh, that is so cool. But now you got to tell me the story. I didn't know a woman owned the puppet. Tell me how this woman came in control the puppet
She was Waylon's manager. She was Waylon's manager.
Oh,
okay. And then when he passed away, don't forget, like, nobody wanted anything to do with people with AIDS back then.
Right.
His family didn't want his stuff, and nobody wanted anything. And, you know, she had not good. So she just sort of, by default, got all this stuff and, has sort of the copyright for it. So if you want to perform as Madam, you have to go through her.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, like that.
I got it. And like I said, nobody understands. I mean, Terry Fader and that other guy, Jeff Dunham, I guess, has made puppetry popular again. But back at the time, I mean, Madam replaced Paul Lynde as the center square of Hollywood Square. That was a big deal at the time. I remember it was huge.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Paul
Lynde
was so funny. And I remember when I was a little boy, my mom would say, oh, come in for lunch. You know, Paul Lynde is on Hollywood Square. And we would sit there laughing over things. Things we totally didn't understand, you know. And
exactly.
Then we would ask my mom, like, what does he mean by that? She'd say, oh, he's just silly. You know, he's just silly.
Oh, it was so funny because
I'd
watch him as Uncle Arthur on Bewitched, and then you'd go listen to that. It's like, what the hell? But it was funny.
Exactly.
Well, very cool. And like I said, Madam went on like solid gold laughing. I want to play a little bit of an interview you had after you took over with Eric Russell on his Under the Wig show. And it really brings the voice of the character to life and talks about all the accomplishments of Madam and Waylon. So we're going to go ahead and play that. Rick Skye as Madam with Eric Russell and an Under the Wig show that was on YouTube. You can find it. This is Madam, and we'll be in just a couple of moments.
You've appeared on numerous shows over the years.
Yeah.
In fact, you have 2 Emmys.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you won those for, I don't remember what, but for 2 years. Was it Madam's Place or just at regular appearances?
On Madam in Manhattan, I think so too. Don't you think so?
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's something Showtime Special.
Oh, excellent. Now, I know you were on the Andy Williams show.
Uh-huh.
And Hollywood Squares. You were in the center square.
Yes, I took Paul Lynde's place at one point.
As you should.
He was a bitchy old dame, too, wasn't he?
Of all the shows and things you've worked on, and all the different people you've worked with, who stood out as like your like ultimate favorite?
Oh, I love Bette Davis.
Okay.
Oh, I love Miss Davis. And Joan Crawford. I worked with Joan Crawford. And Whatever Happened to Baby Madam?
Oh, what
one of my big films back then.
I remember I saw that on like TBS or Turner Classic.
Yeah, the late,
yes.
Late, no residual.
You got your start back in 1974
uh-huh.
with the fabulous Waylon Flowers.
Yeah.
Now, how did you two meet?
We met on the bus going into New York Citoire.
Excellent, excellent. You just knew right then
and
there.
He spilled his drink on my lap. And he stayed there just long enough for us to work things out. But I worked it back in.
Oh, very good, very good. You were doing sellout shows in P-Town?
Yes, but the P is silent, actually.
Oh, it's the P is silent.
Yes, unless you drink the beer, then the P is real loud.
I think I've done that a few times.
You've done that.
I have.
The A something, right?
Ooh, yes, yes, yes. I have fond memories of P-Town. When you start out all those years ago, what stood out as your favorite performance along that time with Waylon?
Oh, we did a performance with the Atlanta Symphony. Can you imagine? And Waylon's mother finally came to see him.
How excellent.
And that was a nice night, yeah.
And you sang at that show?
Yes, I couldn't sing, you know, fuck a shit. But everything else was fine. She loved it.
Excellent. Now you appear like with B. Arthur and... I think,
always B. Arthur.
Oh, yes. And you were recently seen with Neil Patrick Harrison.
Yes.
Now, is there something going on between you two?
Well, they don't call him Neil for nothing. Let's
oh, all right. All right. Now, you have a show that you're touring with now called Madam with
it's
an
Madam
E.
Madam with an E, yes.
Madam with an E. Tell me about that show. How did that come about?
Oh, well, I got so bored staying home, you know. But it took a long time to try and find a replacement for dear Waylon, you know. Yes. So I got one. I'm sort of stuck with him. My new right-hand man.
Oh, yes.
But we've been touring around America, cheering up them one man at a time.
Excellent.
Trying to get back on the television and make it less hard on me.
Oh, so we can
reach a mass audience.
Oh, we do pull a little Betty White. We need to start a Facebook campaign.
Yeah, well, we've done that. Yes, we've tried to get on Ellen and a few things. Now I'm aching to get on Wendy Williams.
Tell me about Rick Scott. How did you two meet?
He's on probation. I'd rather not talk about him. He might not be around for very long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I put an ad in the paper, and he was the only one who answered, so that's why he's with me.
Oh, so you should go to Craigslist.
He's always peeking under my dress. He doesn't fool me. I know why he's here.
Dirty, dirty old man.
Yes. Don't say old. He'll kill you.
Oh, dear. Young person.
Yes, thank you.
Young person.
All righty, we are back. That is Rick Sky as Madam on an interview with Eric Russell. I love that you went on a Madam and an E. I mean, talk about having a continuity line here, Rick. Talk about that
exactly.
Show. You said there's something interesting about that, right?
Yeah, the very first show I did, actually, was we went to Richmond, Virginia, and it was a party in a field that was a fundraiser for people who were trying to open a gay theater in Richmond, Virginia. And they had for 20 years been putting on plays like in a bar upstairs and over the bar. And so they had Madam come down. I entertained. It was like my very first show. And it went really well. And then at the end they said, when we build this theater, you're going to come back and, you know, open it and do a show. And even though it was like 2008 when the economy kind of flopped, they did raise like $1 million when they built this theater. It's called the Richmond Triangle Players. And it's a big gay theater down in Richmond. And they did have me back, and it was, you know, really, we always talk about that now because it's so such a sweet thing, you know. They were so great.
That is cool. And did you come up with the name then, Madam with an E? Because that just sounds so
it's
like
Madam
you.
It's Madam with an E, yes.
That is so in character. I love that so much. All right, well, let's talk about this new show.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for you. Now, don't tell Mamas in New York City is iconic. It's only been there since 1982, but it's had some huge names in this venue, right?
Yes, actually, a lot of people who are very famous now, you can see posters of their very first shows, you know, when they were kids, Anne Hampton Calloway and a lot of gay performers, actually. Alec Mappa used to perform there, you know, the comedian, and Karen Mason and all these, like a lot of Broadway singers and things.
Yeah, I think Rosie O'Donnell got one of her starts there, and Kathy Griffin.
I'd be surprised. You just see like posters and posters and posters all over the wall of these people who are, you know, we really know them now. So it was a great breeding ground for people to be able to, you know, try out their acts and try to get someplace.
And you've had such
there.
A long history with the cabaret yourself. And you said they came to you for this show? That's kind of amazing. That's
yes,
great.
Yes, because I've been doing shows there for 20 years. I did The Flip Side of Needle Tobacco, then I did Macabre, then I did Slice Minnelli, then I did It's Madam With an E, then I did Judy and Liza Together Again. So they came to me when Judy and Liza closed because they were used to having like a big show there on Saturday nights. And when tourists walk down the street on a Saturday night and they see Judy and Liza, you know, they were just walking off the street. It's something you can only see sort of in a big city like New York City. So they had missed that, you know, once we closed. And they came and said, like, maybe, you know, like, Don't Tell Mamas really needs to have Liza here. And, you know, maybe you could just do, like, a variety show and introduce some acts and, like, do your stuff. And so I had to think about it for a while because we just closed that, you know, for 7 years. I was like, do I really want to nair myself every other week and, you know, all of that. And
right.
Then I thought, well, if I can do it a way that makes me happy, I'll do it. And then I thought, oh, if I get some boys and I can do some big numbers with the boys and, you know, like that, like Liza used to be with the dancers and stuff, you know, that'll,
sure,
that'll make me happy. So we did, we got the Kit Kat boys and they come, you know, and we do four part harmony and, I got all new costumes. And,
I love the Kit Kat boys.
Really,
that makes
great.
Twice as interested.
Yeah. So this month we have, like, coming up, we have, Steven Brinberg as Simply Barbara. He's going to be the special guest star. So Liza and Barbara will be back together this month. And, you know, we're looking forward to having sort of bigger guest stars.
And Sidney Meier, who's huge, also won a MAC award like you did. I mean, so that's going to be a great add to the show.
There's no one like Sidney, actually. And that's why I wanted him, because, you know, in a variety show, you want, like, you know, someone who plays the saw, you know, or a lady who plays the banjo, you know, something. And Sidney is just like this throwback to the 1920s, and he does these things like Peel Me a Grape and these crazy songs. He's just so funny. He's just one of the quirkiest, funniest people. So I think he'll
nice
add a lot.
Mr. Vaudeville. I love
yeah
that. That's fantastic. And it's called Bazaz, a Seek. Is it Bazaz or Bazaz or how
Bazaz,
we pronounce it?
Bazaz.
Bazaz. A
yeah
sequin variety show, of course. And, I mean, you have Liz Smith's already calling it a hit, and she's like a big name in town there. So that's kind of feel good.
It means a lot to me because, you know, she was the biggest name in entertainment reporting, you know, for 20 years. So, yeah. That's, when I got that, I thought, okay, this is a good omen. This is good.
Well, that is so great. Now, like I said, it's coming this month on the 25th at 8 o'clock. You have your music director, Rick Ritzel. Where can they find tickets to the show?
Oh, if they just go to www.donttellmamanyc.com, they have a whole list of all the shows that are there, and you can get the tickets online that way. And if you come to New York, you just drop by the theater and make a reservation. It's on 343 West 46th Street. Right in the heart of Times Square. So, and we're doing New Year's Eve too. There's a whole big package for New Year's Eve. Pardon the expression, but they, you know, they serve dinner and have champagne and a show and that kind of thing.
That's incredible. I told you my birthday's on the 30th. I don't think I could handle New Year's Eve in New York City. I just am not built for it. I don't know if that could happen, but I'd love to come on the 29th and hide out of town on the 30th real quick on my birthday.
Please. It would be so great to see you.
I would absolutely love that. Well, my friend, it's great getting to know you. Thank you so much. Where can everyone follow you if they want to find you? Do you have a Twitter or a Facebook or an Instagram they can follow?
Yeah, on Instagram, I'm the Rick Sky.
Super duper. Well, stay on the line for me. I really appreciate you coming on. Guys, you got to go see this show. I'm going to try to hit it on the 29th of December, but if you're going to be in New York City, that's Saturday, November 25th at 8 p.m., you got to hit this show, guys. We're going to come back in just a little bit. Let's play another Seth Sykes. This is his matchup of Plenty of Time and Sing Happy. Guys, we're talking to Rick Sky right here in the Left of Straight show. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
When I was just a young thing, I can recall, I dreamed of seeing Paris in fall, in London in the springtime, I see it all, I see it all someday. For I have plenty of time, plenty of time. Why should I worry? I had plenty of time, plenty of time. What was the hurry? When I was still a young thing, love was for fun, kisses and laughter, then it was done. Yes, when the game was over, oh, I'd run, oh, I'd run away. I had plenty of time, plenty of time. Why should I worry? Yes, I had. can soon go wrong. And I guess I waited much too long. For I've never been to Paris or to London.
A little cabaret on Mondays. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Great interview with Rick Sky. I'm so excited for his new show, and hopefully I can see it for my birthday on the 29th of December. In just a few minutes, guys, we have our second guest, Grant Turk, coming up. He's the executive director and founder of Venice Pride in Venice, California. Let's go back to a couple of things in the news that kind of hit my interest. We talked a little bit a second ago about Waylon Flowers, who created Madam, and how he passed away of HIV back in the heyday of the AIDS day, I guess you could say. when it was very, still very scary and a lot of people very ignorant. And like I said, nobody wanted any of Waylon's belongings because they didn't know he was gone at the time. I think in today's day and age, we'd be a little more enlightened. But this came across my desk yesterday. There's a judge, a federal judge, that was going over a – it's a visiting judge, and he's retired now. This was back in 2012. It just came to light the other day. In 2012, he was a visiting judge presiding over a murder trial over a man who had HIV, and the judge refused – to look over court documents, except court documents, evidence that came in an envelope that the HIV man had licked. He said, who knows where that tongue has been, and was just, this is a judge from the bench saying these things. And this was back in 2012, not too long ago, just actually 2015, and it came to light. And AIDS was a bad thing, guys. It's incredible where we've come to, but it still has such bad connotations, even with PrEP and everything else, and that's, talk about that in quite a few other shows. And then we were talking last week, of course, more about the Harvey Weinstein stuff that's happening, and how I was very proud of Anthony Rapp from Rent and from Star Trek Discovery, and so much more to come out and talk about Kevin Spacey, and that thing has just blown up everywhere, and we've had so many people speaking out in their Me Too stories. Very interesting story came out the other day. Portland Mayor Sam Adams, he's openly gay. And I used to live in Portland for 4 years. I left in 2000. So I remember it well. I still kind of keep track of a lot of people there. But Sam Adams was elected mayor as first openly gay mayor of Portland. He also had an openly gay assistant, and the assistant shared his Me Too story the other day. His name was Savaro Gonzalez, and the mayor, this mayor guy, used to ask him to scout gay clubs and places on trips where the mayor was going to be going to. He subjected him to a lot of obscene gestures. He showed his junk to this assistant. He asked about lewd stories, what was happening between this guy and his boyfriends or dates he went on. So, unfortunately, it's not happening, as we know, through Kevin Spacey. It's not just happening in the straight community, but it happens a lot in the LGBT community now. You just got to hope with all these Me Too stories that people are going to stop being afraid to speak out and know that people are going to listen to you. I did see an interesting story the other day talking about Anthony Rapp coming out. I know a woman was commenting on it and said, isn't it amazing it only takes one man to accuse Kevin Spacey of sexual impropriety and everyone believes him and he immediately loses House of Cards and this special Emmy and all this other stuff, but it has to take 10 to 14 people to do a man, women to do a man before anyone will take notice, which is a pretty sad state of affairs, but also true. Last thing I'll talk about before we get ready for our next guest here, we talked last week about YouTube and their filters on LGBT content. We had a YouTube person on, and they were having a lot of trouble getting their videos liked and watched because of the filters going on YouTube. Well, last Friday, Twitter put new filters in his face, and as of Friday, you could not do search results for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transsexual. They were part of the new set of filters they put in against obscene material on Twitter. You know, they've been on Capitol Hill for all the trouble they've had for over the Russia thing and all this trouble for not policing themselves. Well, Twitter added new filters on Friday, and those filters put LGBTQ names like gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transsexual on the prohibited list, which is really pathetic. They said it was an error. They took them till Sunday to take it down. But then they kind of gave this, with this new part of the new rule, is they're letting, if it's a newsworthy tweet, you can't get in trouble for it. So it almost gives cover to number 45's tweets. Because, of course, we had a hero last week that shut down his account for 11 whole minutes. But we had, he's a hero at Twitter that was leaving the company and shut down Donald Trump's Twitter for 11 minutes. But their new rules that banned the name, banned you searching for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transsexual on Friday, these news also let, that are from newsworthy events or people go through, which is going to give 45 a lot of cover. So I'm not really happy about that. That's more stuff in the news, but it looks like we have our next guest on the line, so I'm going to go welcome him in. Let's go ahead and play a quick song out. This is, if you, I haven't heard it in a while, this is Brandon Shea. I've loved it over the last year. This is his cover of Adele's Hello, which I really love. You're listening to Left of Straight Show. When we come back, we're going to have Grant Turk from Venice Pride. You're listening to Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like me to go over everything. They say that time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles.
And Shea with his cover of Hello. Guys, my next guest is the founder of Venice Pride in Venice Beach, California. They're getting ready to head into the holiday season with a special fundraiser to help support their Pride organization and their Camp Lightbulb, a summer camp experience for LGBT youth between the ages of 14 and 18. It's a replica of the Venice Pride Flag Lifeguard Tower we're going to talk all about, inspired by the real-life tower created by artist Patrick Marston. The festival was also part of history this past summer with the very first partnership ever with the National Football League. I'm so excited to come to the show and talk about all this. Please welcome the founder and CEO of Pride Venice. This is Grant Turk. Grant, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. How are you? Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. Great to be here,
well,
and excited to chat with you about all that's going on here in Venice Pride.
You deserve all the accolades, my friend. Like I was telling you off air, in two short years, you have accomplished a lot, my friend. You are doing some great things out there in beautiful SoCal.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No problem. Let's go ahead and start at the beginning. First time on the show, I'd like to get a little background. Are you originally from L.A., or where are you from, and what kind of got you fired up for Pride?
Well, I'm originally actually from I hail from Cincinnati, Ohio, moved out to for college at Pepperdine in Malibu back in 2002, but I've been a West Side boy ever since. And what really kind of got us inspired to start Venice Pride was back in 2016, the last gay bar west of the 405, a place called the Roosterfish was closing, actually closed in May of 2016. And we thought when it was closing, we're like, oh my gosh, there's no place really for the gay community, the LGBT community west of the 405 to really kind of gather. And we felt like it was kind of a shame and that should change and there should be some kind of an event or something that will remind the entire community that there's a place where there's still a place for the LGBT community on the west side, even though the last gay bar had closed. And so that's kind of what inspired me to start the first Venice Pride, which we did back in June of 2016, and had the fabulous Gigi Gorgeous help us light illuminate the Venice sign into the colors of the Pride flag. And so that's how it started. It all started from the closure of the last gay bar.
That's an amazing story. I love that. And for those of you not familiar with California, y'all know I grew up there. Of course, we have LA Pride and Long Beach has a Pride. But right along the coast there, like you said, the west of the 405 there, which is the most traffic freeway you've ever seen in your life. But it's a great little bedroom community there. And that's kind of cool to have your own Pride there. We're starting to have little Prides pop up all over Northeast Ohio, but you guys came together in a great way, and I love that it's a grassroots level. That's amazing.
Definitely, definitely. And so we moved on from doing that was our first year. We illuminated the Venice sign, and back when we started it, I always had this idea. I wanted to do something that was permanent, that would become a landmark. And so I had this idea back in 2016. It was about a year in the making. It took, you know, it didn't happen instantaneously, but we finally got around to doing it. In the second year, I had this idea back in 2016 to paint a lifeguard tower, essentially lay the LGBT pride flag. And what would a lifeguard tower look if you wrapped the rainbow flag around it? And so came this idea of taking that iconic symbol of a California lifeguard tower, which is, a life-saving image, and then wrapping it with the LGBT pride flag, which is, a symbol really of diversity, and wrapping those two iconic images together into it was initially going to be a temporary public art project when we unveiled it on June 1st of this year. But then in September, the L.A. County Board of Commissioners, they passed a motion to make it permanent. So it's exciting. It's that we now have a permanent monument to acceptance on the beach, which will be there past my lifetime, past your lifetime, and will remain a shining beacon, essentially, that here you can be who you want to be, and that acceptance will always reign supreme.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, I'm a Southern California boy. I lifeguard stations are a way of life down there. I love as they go along the beach. They're usually that ugly pale blue. But like you said, this has become an iconic feature. I remember seeing it all over Instagram last year. And you said originally it was only going to be for Pride. And I think I was Also, a beach close by named after the first openly gay man on city council, Bill Rosendahl, right?
Correct. Yeah, actually, the beach where it sits on, which is between Breeze and Horizon and Brooks Avenue, that's about 4 or 5 block stretch of beach that has been dedicated after Bill Rosendahl, who was the first openly gay man elected to LA City Council. And it originally was back in the 70s. That area was kind of, for a temporary period, was the nude beach. So it was very popular for that. And sort of that kind of that history of openness to the nude beach, that kind of thing, was one of the reasons we kind of just decided that would be the perfect place for not only the rainbow, the Pride Flag lifeguard tower, but also dedicate it as not necessarily a gay beach, but as an inclusive beach, a place where people of all sexual orientations can gather together and celebrate themselves triumphantly.
That is great. I love that. And then it was put together by the artists Patrick Marston and Michael Brunt. And like you said, it was scheduled to be just like from Pride to September 8th. But then, and I don't know him, but a guy named Colin Campbell, who's an activist and an actor out there, he's petitioned to make it be permanent. He got over 11,000 signatures. That's pretty impressive.
I know, right? It's crazy cool. Colin is this awesome guy, awesome dude that started this petition on change.org. And said it, and it just got a lot of attention. Had this great video with the YMCA and video of the lifeguard tower where it really just took on. And you know, again, over 11,000 people from all across the country and the world came on board to support this thing to make it permanent. And then LA County Supervisor Sheila Kuehl came on board and saw it. That's amazing as well. And she was the one who introduced the motion at the county level to make it a permanent landmark. Interestingly enough, Sheila Kuehl is also the first openly gay person to be elected to state legislature. So that's kind of a cool bonus antidote as well.
That is amazing. I love all that about the story. We're going to talk about the fundraising part in a little bit. Let's go back. You talked about lighting up the Venice lights. People that might not have been there before might not know about the lights that go across Venice. Talk about that, and talk about that fantastic fundraiser idea to adopt a light bulb. I think that's amazing too.
Awesome. Yeah. So the Venice sign is really super cool. It has a really vibrant history. The sign itself was originally put up in the early 1900s when Abbot Kinney, who was the founder of Venice of America, which is what essentially Venice is today, he put up this sign. The Venice sign looks very much as it does today. And it was up until about the 50s or so, and then it came down because things had fallen into disrepair in Venice, and that was one of the things that went with the times. But then back in 2007, a group of Venetians worked together to get fundraise and get money together, and they put back up the Venice sign. And so then back in 2012, we started a holiday tradition called the Venice Holiday Sign Lighting, where for the first time the Venice sign traded out its white lights for colored bulbs for the holiday season. And so then in 2016, I thought, oh, well, how we could take that kind of model and essentially do it for Pride. And so we came up with this idea. It's like there are six letters in the word Venice, and there are six colors in the pride flag. So it was perfect.
You gotta love
for
when a plan comes together, right?
you do. So one of the ways to help, you know, Venice Pride is very much a community celebration. In many ways, it differentiates itself from other prides in the sense it's very community based. We're also in a pride, one of the rare prides that we're all of the events in June for our pride celebration are free and open to the public. Which is a big deal. A number of other prides across the country
do
this model. New York City is free and open to the public. San Francisco is free and open to the public. I think Amsterdam does. It's free and open to the public. To me, I really think that Pride is first and foremost a protest. It was rooted and born out of protest. And so I think that Pride should be as accessible as possible to as many people as possible. And as soon as you begin charging an admission fee, even if it's just $2 or $3. It inherently excludes people. So I think that's one of the cool things that differentiates ourselves. But one of the ways we raised money this past year, we did adopt a bulb. And so essentially for $100, members of the community could adopt a different colored light bulb. And so we had many individuals sponsor bulbs. And we, interestingly enough, got the LA Chargers and the Los Angeles Rams to come on board, and they the Los Angeles Rams adopted the blue bulbs in the letter C, and then the Chargers adopted all the yellow bulbs in the letter N. And that was super cool because it was the first time in history that not one but two NFL teams came out and sponsored an LGBT Pride event.
I want to talk about that because that is amazing in and of itself. Congrats to you to get NFL teams, I mean, first time ever associated with the Pride event. Now, not only that, you guys have kind of kept the tradition going, and you guys started gay gridiron football watch parties in November. Or I guess it started earlier than that. But you have a varsity gay league there or something that has this going on. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, so we have it's called Gay Gridiron. Very shortly after Pride this year, the Los Angeles Chargers reached out to us, very enthusiastic with about the response they got from being a part of Venice Pride. They wanted to explore a way in which they could expand upon their relationship with the LGBT community on the in Los Angeles. And so we talked for several months and finally came up with this idea of doing a series of away game watch parties, and we dubbed it Gay Gridiron, and we had our first event on October 29th. We had it at the Basement Tavern, which is on the west side in Santa Monica, and we're actually having our second event, which is going to be this Sunday, this Sunday, which is going to be November 12th. It's going to be at Roosterfish, which is this bar in Venice, which is actually, interestingly enough, brings up another interesting topic. So the Roosterfish, which is the gay bar that was originally closed in May 2016, it's going to be reopening. But so we had a couple of different events there at that bar. And so November 12th is going to be when the Chargers take on the Jaguars. We're going to be doing gay gridiron beer bust at the Roosterfish, and it starts at 9:30 a.m. and goes till 12 a.m. on Sunday. If people want to go, tickets are free. It's open to the public, and you have to be 21 or over. But if you want to get tickets to that, again, they're free tickets, but you have to register in advance, and you can do that by going to venicepride.org/football.
That's amazing. So this gay bar is opening as a gay bar again, or is it just taking the name?
Correct. It's going to be reopening as a gay bar. So back in 2016, we trademarked the word Roosterfish. Interestingly enough, nobody had ever trademarked it. And we did that essentially to kind of try to protect the legacy of Roosterfish, and thinking that maybe that at some point down the line, that by trademarking it, that would give us a position to essentially kind of maybe save the Roosterfish. And as it happened or came to be earlier this year, there were some guys that were trying to reopen that space, and we approached them and said, "Hey, we have the trademark with Roosterfish. Would love for you to keep the name. I think it's the smartest thing you could do, and help you try to essentially reopen it as a gay bar." And they loved that idea, and so we've been working with them since to help facilitate the reopening of that venue as the original Roosterfish, which opened in 79, so it ran for about 37 years, had a brief period, but we've been working really hard with them and the local community activists to get it reopened. And I think it looks very likely that will happen officially by the end of the year.
That is a great story. Wow, I didn't even know about that part of it. That is fantastic. So cool.
So really, you know, by next year, everything should really come full circle. You know, Venice Pride started out of the fact that the Roosterfish was closed, and we wanted to create a sense of community in Venice, and we've done that. And part of that has also been now is going to be the reopening of the Roosterfish. So everything is really coming full circle.
That is awesome. And like you said, it's going to be this Sunday, November 12th. You're also going to do it on November 23rd, December 16th, and December 24th. That place is going to be packed. Us gays like to drink on Christmas Eve, I'll tell you that. It's going to be a scary day then.
They do. And we're doing it for 2 years. So those are all the dates for this year, and then we'll be doing the away games next season as well.
That is amazing. Congratulations. That is great. Let's go ahead and get back to lifeguard, because I love that you've taken this iconic lifeguard tower now and turned it into a fundraiser. You guys are putting a miniature replica version of this for $35. Now, it says kit. Does that mean you build it yourself, or is it pre-made? I was confused.
Absolutely. It's a kit. It's a 9-piece kit made out of chipboard. Essentially, everybody can build their own Tower of Pride right in their living room, and it's a perfect stocking stuffer. Perfect. It goes well on your bookshelf, on your desk, at work or at home office. It's really super cool. It's a nine piece chipboard set. It's pre-colored, so it's all the colors as they appear on Lifeguard Tower. All you have to do is assemble it. It's, you know, 4 or 5 steps. All the instructions are included in the box, and then within about, you know, 5-10 minutes, you can have it your own individual Venice Pride flag lifeguard tower in your home. And also, you're correct, it's going to be a fundraiser, so we're initially working towards raising $30,000, which will fund 1 week of Camp Lightfall, which is an LGBTQ youth camp that's a separate organization. And it's run by this great guy named Puck Markham. And it's an LGBTQ youth camp. They've been doing them for several years in Provincetown. They're having their first winter camp out here in Los Angeles after Christmas and into the new year. And they're also going to be doing another camp out here in the summer in July of 2018. And that's all the initial funds that we raise through the sales of the Venice Pride Flag Lifeguard Tower kit will be going towards funding that week of camp in the summer. So we're going to be raising $30,000.
That is amazing. You have to put me in touch with that camp. We're going to have them on the show in either December or next summer, or even both. That'd be fantastic. That's a great
Absolutely.
Deal. And it's an overnight camp, too, for the youth, right? That's amazing.
Correct. And if folks out there who are interested in purchasing one of these kits, all you have to do is go to venicepride.org/tower. It's venicepride.org/tower, and they can make the purchase right on their website. They're all handmade here in Venice Beach, California, and so you can get yourself a unique gift for yourself or a loved one this holiday season.
Guys, you got to do this. I'm going to get one here from my little Midwest burg of Northeast Ohio, but you can bring a taste each to you by getting your own rainbow flag lifeguard station, only $35. I think, like you said, it's available right on the website, and then it only takes like 7 days or so for delivery. You guys are pretty fast turnaround on that.
Yeah, definitely.
That is amazing. Wow, such great things happening over at Venice Pride. And talk about, you got to be gearing up already for next year. You're only about 6-7 months away now. What's next week you're looking to? You've done so much in 2 years. I can't imagine what's going to happen next year.
We're going to be really exciting. We have some really exciting plans for next year. I'm proud to announce and be able to share with your viewers that we're going to be Pride next year. Venice Pride will be taking place on June 2nd and 3rd. It's the first weekend in June. So really, we kind of opened the Pride season. It's the first weekend in June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, 2018. So mark your calendars and head on down to Venice Beach for Venice Pride 2018.
That is so cool. Now talk a little bit about it. I know last year you have like a block party, and then you did something at Muscle Beach last year. You plan to do the same thing? Or what exactly happens during the Venice Pride weekend?
Yeah, so Friday is always the Venice Pride Venice Pride sign lighting. So we like illuminate the Venice sign, the colors of the LGBT Pride flag, and then that sign remains illuminated in those colors the entire month of June. Typically, we have a surprise celebrity guest who comes and lights the sign. So the first year we had YouTube star Gigi Gorgeous. This past year we had the fabulous Lori Petty from Orange Is the New Black. And next year, we're going to have somebody also fabulous and famous light the sign. That's Friday evening. And then typically we have 3 or 4 after parties that happen throughout the West Side. afterwards. It's kind of essentially a Venice Pride opening celebratory party. And that on Saturday, this past year, we had an event at Muscle Beach called Status is Sexy, where we partnered with another local nonprofit called APAIT. They work heavily with AIDS in the LGBT community in Los Angeles. And we plan to do that again this year. And then we also plan to expand to Sunday, and we're going to be having a party on the pier in Venice off of Washington. So that's going to be super super exciting. And again, all those events are free and open to the public.
Congratulations. That is so fantastic, Grant. I really appreciate you coming on the show to talk about that. Give everyone the Pride's website again, and if they want to follow you and ask you questions, you have your own personal social media they can follow you at, or Pride social?
Definitely, yeah. So you can check Venice Pride out at venicepride.org. That's V-E-N-I-C-E pride.org, just like the city in Italy, venicepride.org. And if they want to check us out on Facebook, they can do so at facebook.com/Venice Pride.
That's fantastic. Grant, thanks so much for being on the show today. I wish you so much luck. It's going to be an amazing year. You've done so much great things, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was a real pleasure.
All right, well, stay on the line for me, Grant. Guys, we're going to go ahead and play out here with our good friend Brandon and James. This is the vocal song. And when we come back, we'll wrap things up in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Back then, fighting the law of attraction, never the one taking action. Years of denying this beauty inside. Sleeping, scared of the fear they'd speak, and I never knew I was a beacon, waiting and waiting to light up the sky. When you're down and out, don't know what to do, what I found for me, I can be for you.
right, guys, we're back with Brandon and James with You Belong. That does it for the Left of Straight show this Monday, November 6th. A big shout out and thank you to my guests, Rick Sky and Grant Turk. Tomorrow, I'll be right back here at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time with another Left of Straight show. Fantastic. Lisa Lenke and Nick Hayward from Haircut 100 will be on. And I hope you have a fantastic week. Thanks for tuning in. And I will talk to you real soon. We are out of here. Bye-bye.